19-1169, Rocky Mountain Priestress versus Liberty Mutual.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Melissa Liff. I'm here today on behalf of Rocky Mountain Priestress. We believe there are two overarching issues here today requiring this court reverse the grant of summary judgment. First, respectfully, the order for summary judgment decided disputed issues of material fact. Second, and related, the court did not correctly address the issue of fortuity. Before I get into the specifics of those two issues, I'd ask that in looking at these issues, the court apply the law of Colorado and determine how a Colorado court would decide these questions of insurance coverage. Respectfully, the court below creates a tension by declining to apply state court rules for insurance policy interpretation. That law, the law of the state of Colorado, is that insurance policies are construed to meet the reasonable expectations of the insured, and those policies are liberally construed in favor of the insured to provide the broadest possible coverage. This does not turn on whether a policy is ambiguous. The doctrine of reasonable expectations applies regardless of ambiguity in a policy. Colorado law also dictates that the terms that are undefined in a policy are given their plain, ordinary meaning according to what a person of reasonable intelligence would understand. I understand that my client may be considered a sophisticated business entity in terms of construction or precast concrete, but that doesn't mean they're held to a higher standard when it comes to insurance policy understanding or interpretation. The court in Bailey specifically stated that courts have a heightened responsibility in reviewing insurance policies, pointing out that insurance policies are not ordinary bilateral contracts, not often a lot of negotiation that happens. Using these guiding principles, Rocky Mountain Priestress demonstrated that its claim falls within the coverage provisions of the policy. In other cases, the court can look to, in regards to the doctrine of reasonable expectations, regardless of ambiguity, Bailey, we'd cite the court to Wong, Simon versus Shelter. I understand that federal courts and Colorado courts don't always agree on some of these issues, but the Compass case makes clear that the Colorado Supreme Court has not uniformly followed decision by federal courts or even the majority of jurisdictions. Next, Liberty has the burden to prove that its exclusions bar coverage. Insurers looking to avoid coverage must do so in clear, unequivocal language. Again, cases to look at for that proposition would be Shelter, Farmers Alliance versus Ho, that limitations must be clearly expressed. And Huang lays out that exclusions must be clear and specific. Overall, courts are looking to find coverage, not looking to exclude coverage. I'll turn to the issue of fortuity and some of the disputed issues of fact in this case. The district court could not determine respectfully that Rocky Mountain Priestress's failure to do the contracted work correctly was not fortuitous. Viewed in the light most favorable to Rocky Mountain Priestress, any deficiencies in Rocky Mountain Priestress's work were accidental and caused damage to the owner's property. Liberty's own adjuster determined the damage deals with, quote, sinking pillars or columns, which by necessity support some other structure in the building. Rocky Mountain Priestress should not have to wait for catastrophic loss to seek insurance coverage. This building should not have had to fall down on everyone before repairs could be made and before coverage applied. Respectfully, the court erred in applying the contract to those specific facts of this case, in addition to being...
Well, short of falling down, was there any... Originally... Your client claimed that there was some structural damage to the structure, and you abandoned that, right?
No, I don't.
And just said, well, there's not that it collapsed in any way. I can't remember the exact types of claims of damage to the structure that were originally argued, but. The only reason for changing it wasn't because the building was starting to collapse in any way, but because it wasn't built according to specs. Is that correct?
As I'm understanding your question, respectfully, not exactly. I think the issue here is you had the discovery of defective grouting. To put it pretty simply, there's some complicated engineering reports and complicated engineering repairs, and we never got to the point of experts in this case before summary judgment was granted. Well, so,
let me clarify that.
Sure.
Originally, you claimed that there was direct physical loss or damage to the concrete columns and pillars.
Right.
And that was abandoned.
No, I think there was sinking of the columns and pillars. I don't think that's been abandoned. And I think it raises an important point that we'd request the court go back and look at the policy, because there's two provisions here. The coverage provision, which says, quote, we cover direct physical loss or damage caused by a covered peril to buildings or structures, and it goes on while in the course of construction. And then there's another provision under the heading perils covered. The policy provides, we cover risks of direct physical loss or damage unless the loss is limited or caused by a peril that is excluded. I think that word risks is important in there. It was up to the insured to so delineate if they intended a different result. The word risk, and we go through the basic definitions, but again, we're looking at an ordinary common person understanding here under Colorado law. The definition of risk, exposure to the chance of injury or loss. So when you have Liberty's own adjuster saying there are sinking columns and pillars, you certainly have exposure to the chance of injury or loss. And once we come within those coverage provisions, the burden's on Liberty to prove its exclusions apply.
So you're saying there was evidence of that the columns were sinking?
I think Liberty's adjuster's statement specifically says there are sinking columns slash pillars. That statement, again, this is where the court got into disputed issues of fact. Nobody had a chance to take any depositions of these people, so we don't know if there would have been further explanation there, but certainly the district court should not have stepped into the shoes of the fact finder to evaluate that statement and conclude that this couldn't possibly have been fortuitous.
What would it take to be fortuitous? The fact that it was just misdesigned, misconstructed, that's enough to make it fortuitous?
Yes, I think that we do have cases to say that a defective construction is a fortuitous loss. Adams Arapaho, which is a Tenth Circuit case applying Colorado law. This idea of fortuity is an interesting one because the word fortuitous doesn't appear in the policy. And the district court acknowledged this is an implied term. To the extent Liberty wanted some other meaning of fortuitous, it was up to them to delineate that. That's the Cypress case. If they intended a different result from their builder's risk policy, they have to put that in there. This concept of fortuity is very clearly a question of fact, and the level of damage, the sinking pillars and columns, which by their very nature support a building, would cause damage to others' work and to the owner's property. Those are all fact questions that shouldn't have been decided at this stage on summary judgment.
What about the exclusion for workmanship?
Sure. I think, and this is where we get into, again, to take you back to the policy, you have to plug in this definition of perils covered. The exclusion has an exception that specifically uses the phrase covered peril. And I'm quoting from the policy, but if an act, defect, error, or omission is described above results in a covered peril, we do cover the loss or damage caused by that covered peril. So if you go back and plug in the language of covered peril, you get, if an act, error, or omission is described above results in risks of direct physical loss or damage. So you're getting into this circular logic where we've brought it into the coverage provisions. And then that same definition is used in this exception to the exclusion. I think a person of ordinary intelligence would understand that there is coverage here for that.
Well, would that totally eliminate the exclusion for workmanship?
No, I don't think it does.
Because when would it not be? When would you have a failure of design or workmanship?
Sure,
I think that didn't create a peril. if there's something wrong.
Sure. I think if you just have defective grouting with no other resulting loss, and maybe the grouting is unattractive or something of that nature, you go in and fix it, and it's just the grouting, then you don't maybe...
But that would, the exclusion would be totally unnecessary then anyway. You wouldn't have a damage to property.
And I think some of the language here is confusing, and that's why Colorado courts emphasize the heightened responsibility to look for coverage, not to look for exclusions to coverage, because I think sometimes these insurance policies, you have to bend over backwards to try to understand them. So you do have to look at what an ordinary person would understand in this circumstance. And I think here it's quite clear when you plug in the definitions drafted by Liberty that include the word risks of direct physical loss or damage, that we certainly would have coverage here. I'm happy to entertain any other questions, but at this point, I think I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Nicole Gorham, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee Liberty Mutual Fire Insurance Company. The record here is clear. The only claim submitted to Liberty was one in which Rocky Mountain seeks reimbursement for costs it incurred to remediate its faulty work, namely grouting that did not meet design and engineer specifications.
Do you agree that there was sinking of the pillars?
No, we do not. And we do not believe that the record will show that there was any evidence of sinking columns.
She said, your opposing counsel said that your adjuster said there were sinking columns.
Yes, and if you look in the claim note, which we've included in the record, the claim note basically is having the adjuster repeat what it received from Rocky Mountain, which was this allegation that there were sinking columns with respect to other projects. That's how they discovered that they needed to check the project here. When they checked the project here, all they found and the only evidence is there was insufficient grouting itself. So we would submit that there is no evidence in the record of these, quote, sinking columns. I was going to get into this later, but I can go ahead and address it. There are two reports that they've submitted to help support their argument related to the issue, the defect. And the two reports are Weiss-Janney reports. They had an investigator come out, do reports, and make repair recommendations. There's a November 30th, 2016 report and a March 2nd, 2017 report. You'll find that the only thing Weiss-Janney found was issues with the grout itself. So they recommended that it be regrouted. And so all the reports deal with regrouting. There is not a single reference that we have found in those reports to, quote, sinking columns. And while we did not go through depositions, although the parties had an opportunity to do so if they wanted to on the coverage issue, the Honorable Judge Mage allowed the parties to conduct discovery on the coverage issue. Both parties conducted discovery. We issued written discovery to the other side. They had produced initial disclosure in which they identified various categories of claim damage. It appeared to us that that was only related to the grouting itself, but we requested documentation if there was any other evidence of damage. What we received back was over 11,000 pages of documents. And notwithstanding the 11,000 pages of documents, other than attorney argument, you will see from the record, there is no evidence of, quote, sinking columns or any damage caused by sinking columns.
What about the claim that the argument that they're entitled to coverage for risk of damage?
We would argue that's not the way the policy reads. So if you look at, and I can go to that provision now, if you look at the plain language of the policy, which is what the court starts with when you're interpreting an insurance policy, the coverage provision on the first page, the ensuing loss provision provides property covered. We cover direct physical loss or damage caused by a covered peril to buildings or structures while in the course of construction, erection, or fabrication. So what this requires is three things. Direct physical loss or damage caused by a covered peril to buildings or structures while in the course of construction. So first, Rocky Mountain must show that there was some direct physical loss or damage.
You're fine with that language.
What about
under perils covered?
Right. So then you get to perils covered, and it's not under a definition section. It's under a perils covered section. So it starts over, and it says, we cover the risk of direct physical loss or damage. Sorry, let me get to that section. Yes, we cover the risks of direct physical loss or damage unless the loss is limited or caused by apparel that is excluded. So what this provision here is saying is there are risks that this policy is intended to cover. Every insurance policy covers some risk. This policy covers, and this is why it's called an all-risk policy, basically all risks. Risk of fire, risk of theft, risk of vandalism, risk that a falling crane would fall on the project. So here what the risk is saying is that is what the policy is intended to cover against. But it has to be risk of physical loss or damage. And that's how, when you read that in connection with the coverage provision, was it fire that caused direct physical loss or damage? Was it wind that caused direct physical loss or damage? Was it a falling crane that caused direct physical loss or damage? So that explains the risk, and then you get to what triggers coverage, which is actual or direct physical loss or damage.
What did the authorities say on this?
And I will direct you to the Travelers case. That was a case in which a court interpreted a very similar provision. Instead of perils covered, it said, I think, cause of loss covered or something like that. And it explains exactly what I explained here of how you read those two provisions and how it could appear circular, but it's not. I can get a citation for that.
And Travelers is the only case on that point? Is it unanimous authority supporting your view, or is there contrary law that you have to distinguish?
Well, the other authority would just be all of the case law that says how you interpret an insurance policy by looking at the language. And I think that you have to interpret, and the case law is very clear, that you interpret the insurance policy as a whole. So you can't look at the provisions in a vacuum. And so if you're interpreting this to mean risk of direct physical loss or damage, it would render the coverage provision not applicable, because that it clearly says that there must be direct physical loss or damage caused by a covered peril during the course of construction.
The Travelers case, was that the Federal District Court of Colorado, RK Mechanical versus Travelers? Is that the one?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, the Travelers.
Okay, that's fine. You'll need to do more on that.
So going back, I would like to first address this issue that there was some genuine issue of disputed fact. There was not in this case. The only costs, and Rocky Mountain has admitted this, the only costs it incurred were costs expended to remediate its faulty work. As you've seen from the background, or you will see from the background facts here, they are undisputed. The developer, Colorado Center Development, or CCD, entered into a construction contract with J.E. Dunn, the general contractor. The project was for a 15-story building with some commercial retail office space as well as an above-grade parking structure. J.E. Dunn, in turn, entered into a subcontract with Rocky Mountain. There's no dispute regarding the scope of work that Rocky Mountain was agreed to perform. Rocky Mountain has stipulated that it agreed to perform work at the project, which included, among other things, engineering, supplying, and installing precast concrete columns. And more specifically, Rocky Mountain admits in its opening brief, page 8, and reply brief, page 3, that its work included supplying and installing grout and or patching of all connections required by engineering for the structural integrity of the precast. After Rocky Mountain had installed the precast columns, it learned because of other projects that its work was defective. And so on page 9 of its opening brief, you'll see Rocky Mountain states, and I quote, in approximately the summer of 2016, damage relating to sinking pillars / columns and grouting issues at other projects led to the retention of a third-party engineering firm, Weiss Janney Elsner Associates, WJE, to investigate the work done by RMP at the project. WJE investigated the project and made repair recommendations. And that was what I referenced earlier, the two reports. Weiss Janney came back, they provided the two reports, and there's no dispute, the only thing Weiss Janney found was faulty workmanship, insufficient grouting. So Weiss Janney recommended that the joints between precast columns and pilaster be regrouted, and that's what they spent the cost on, is to regrout. There's not a single reference, as I mentioned earlier, about sinking columns in these reports. And as Judge Mach aptly noted, as the contractor who made the repairs, Rocky Mountain should be in possession of evidence regarding the extent to which the columns were in fact sinking. and other than attorney argument, they've never provided any evidence that they were in fact sinking. So Judge Mage correctly found that there was no disputed issue of material fact, and this could be decided as a matter of law. The second issue that I want to address is the fortuity. That is a complete red herring because there is no fortuity word in this policy. So going to the language of the policy.
Well, we've said that that's an implicit term of builder's risk.
Yes, and so what I wanted to get to there is Rocky Mountain respectfully has misread the case law, especially the Adams Arapahoe County case. They are arguing that defective workmanship itself is a fortuitous loss. And the court did not find that. If you look in their own briefs in the quoted language, they didn't find that defective workmanship was a fortuitous loss. They found that defective workmanship can cause a fortuitous loss. And it is very standard in policies that you have defects exclusions because builder's risk policies are not intended to cover damage or costs for a subcontractor to remediate its own work. And if you look in the Adams Arapahoe County case, that did not deal with a subcontractor seeking costs to remediate its faulty work. That case actually had other resulting loss. You had a situation where there was faulty material put on the roof of a building, and then after construction was completed years later, the roof was found to be corroded. That's resulting damage, and then a partial portion of the roof collapsed. So the district, the school district, sought coverage for the collapsed roof. And they also found because the whole roof was corroded, another loss, that could also be covered. But they didn't find that the faulty workmanship itself, i.e. that the subcontractor gets to be reimbursed for costs for the faulty work, was covered. And so now I would just like to walk through the provisions of the policy. I'll do this quickly. As I mentioned earlier, there must be direct physical, or under the coverage provision, direct physical loss or damage caused by a covered peril to buildings or structures during the course of construction. And as I went over earlier, there's no evidence of direct physical loss or damage here. So then you get to the perils covered section. And under that, it says, because again, the coverage provision says caused by a covered peril. So then you have to go to what is a covered peril. And under the covered peril section, it says we cover risks of direct physical loss or damage unless the loss is limited or caused by a peril that is excluded. So then you have to ask, what are the perils excluded? And the policy
is... You don't even get to this unless there's the direct physical loss, right? This is an alternative argument?
No, this is part of it. So, yes. Yeah, if there's no direct physical loss or damage, we would submit that they haven't even... There's no claim to be made. But assuming that there is direct physical loss or damage, then you would get to, okay, is it a covered peril? And the covered peril says that no loss that's an excluded peril is covered. So under the excluded peril section, the applicable section is section 2C, there's a defects, errors, and omissions provision. And under this it says, we do not pay for loss or damage consisting of, caused by, or resulting from an act, defect, error, or omission, negligent or not, relating to design, specifications, construction materials or workmanship, or maintenance, installation, renovation, remodeling, or repair. So broken out, it does not cover loss or damage consisting of a defect, error, or omission, negligent or not, relating to design, construction, workmanship, or installation of the concrete columns themselves. So this wouldn't pay to regrout concrete columns. Two, it does not cover loss or damage caused by or resulting from a defect, error, or omission, negligent or not, relating to design, construction, workmanship, or installation of the concrete columns. So even if you accepted their argument that there were sinking columns, that would be something caused by the defective workmanship and still wouldn't be included, or still wouldn't be covered, because it would fall under the second portion of the exclusion, which includes loss or damage caused by or resulting from defective workmanship. So respectfully, we would submit that this argument that, or this idea that Rocky Mountain's faulty workmanship was accidental makes no difference, because negligent or not, this doesn't cover faulty workmanship. So the trial court properly held that to the extent there may be physical sinking of the columns, it is undisputed that the sinking was caused by insufficiently grouted joints, which cause falls directly within the defects exclusion. Now I want to very quickly, in the brief time I have remaining, address the ensuing loss provision. That provision says, and it's an exception to the defects exclusion, which says, but if an act, defect, error, or omission, as described above, results in a covered peril, then liberty does not, then liberty does cover the loss or damage caused by the covered peril. So there's no dispute that faulty workmanship is an excluded peril, so it can't be a covered peril. So what this is plainly saying is that there must be an excluded peril that results in a covered peril, which covered peril causes damage. And here we don't have that. And I will just briefly give you an example of where that may be the case, and that is if these sinking columns somehow busted out a window in the project, and rainwater then came in and damaged the interior of the building, then you would have an excluded peril, which is the construction, the faulty construction, which resulted in then there was a covered peril, which was the water coming through, and you had damage resulting from the covered peril, the water. So it indirectly goes back to the faulty workmanship, but you have an intervening covered peril that would result in coverage under this policy. And so based on the foregoing, we would submit that there are no disputed issues of material fact in this case. The policy is clear and unambiguous, and therefore we would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's granting of summary judgment in Liberty's favor. Thank you.
I'll just briefly address some of the cases that counsel raised. I'll start with the traveler's opinion. That case dealt with cross motions. Here, I think it's worth noting that we did not file a cross motion for summary judgment. We didn't believe that there were undisputed issues and that this case was ready for determination as a matter of law. I think there are insurance type cases where early summary judgment motions and cross motions are appropriate, duty to defend type cases, perhaps where you don't have the disputed facts you have here.
I'm not sure I understand you. I thought Travelers wasn't cited for there not being factual disputes, but was cited for how we interpret the language regarding perils covered.
Sure, and I think there's a couple of things in that case that are worth noting. I think the court did comment there that the language does appear circular, and I think we have some of that circular language happening here. And in addition, in that case, it was being argued that the snow brought the loss within coverage. There was a snow that caused a displaced connection piece to the roof. I forget the technical term. And that makes that slightly different than what we have here, where we don't have the rainwater or the snow.
I thought it was being said for the proposition that when it talks about risk of loss in the perils covered language, that does not add anything to the coverage. It's got to be physical loss or damage, not just the risk of a physical loss or damage.
Well,
is that a proper interpretation of Travelers?
My understanding here is that, and again, this is why I spent a lot of time talking about how Colorado looks at insurance policies. Liberty decided to include that word risks, and we've laid out the dictionary definition of the word risk, but I think it's a pretty straightforward word. If they wanted a different result, I believe under Cypress, it was up to them to delineate that.
Do you have cases interpreting language like that? My understanding was they were saying that the Travelers case interpreted that very language. Do you have cases contrary to that interpreting the language in the perils
I think cover? This is an issue of first impression for Colorado law. Okay. To the extent there is some discussion of ensuing loss provisions, I think the Vision 1 case that's cited in the briefing, it's a Washington case, but they seem to have similar rules to Colorado of insurance policy interpretation. I also just wanted to take a moment to talk about RK Mechanical. Again, cross motions there. And there was coverage, I believe, in that case for the resulting water damage under the ensuing loss provision. I'll conclude just by saying that I think the fact that we are able to go back and forth about the sinking pillars and columns and what the WJE reports say and don't say demonstrates that we do have disputed issues of fact here that would have been disputed had we gone further down the road in this case. And we'd respectfully ask that the court reverse the grant of summary judgment.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Case is submitted. Counsel excused. Court will be in recess till 9 tomorrow morning. 8:30 tomorrow morning.